emanating from deep within the pulsing neon skyline that is perfectly replicated in a snow globe sitting on top of Ridley Scott's night table. From deep within a corner office on the 60th floor of the 28th tallest building in the world, high enough to make even the Christian Baileyest Batman think twice before he jumps, this is Dystopian Present, a podcast on geeky pursuits in Hong Kong, here on the oneofus.net podcast network. I'm Ross, and I'm joined in this episode by my co-hosts, Previous Snide, Stephen, and Alicia, all of whom had to suffer through my lame, abysmal cold open on the show proper, which I'm now re-recording. I chopped out my co-hosts' intros when I chopped out my blender, so here's a helpful crib sheet to tell them apart. Snide is the guy that swears at me when I insult Steve Ditko. Stephen is our resident kung fu flick master. And Alicia is the one with disturbing unification theories about democracy movements and suitcase murders. This is our Occupy Lipto edition, with no apologies to Mel Gibson. And in this show, we discuss our clean, polite, but ultimately ineffective street protesters. We also predict that the growing synergies of the Disney Marvel Omnimedia Corporation will result in an MMA-style smackdown between Jiminy Cricket and Rocket Raccoon, and will result in casting one of the Mouseketeers as Doctor Strange's manservant Wong. We also deliver a fairly glowing meta-review of Interstellar. We speculate on the rise of the legend, the upcoming reboot of the Wong Fei Hung story, and we whiz through some of our personal picks and picadillos. Thanks for listening in. We hope you enjoy. Ross, and to my left, the usual suspects include
Previous Snide,
Stephen,
Alicia,
and we're here in our recording studios in Wan Chai, high above where this, Wan Chai, for those of you not in the know, is a multi-purpose district in Hong Kong. Perfectly respectable business by day and perfectly...
Plumbing by day.
Plumbing by day. Housewares.
Plumbing by day. Other kinds of plumbing by night.
It is a ferociously red light district at night, and also the scene recently of what's been come to be known as the... has it become known as the suitcase murders? Has that been the moniker that we've landed on?
Yeah. I'm sorry, but yes.
Don't apologize. You did not.
You didn't do it.
You didn't do it.
Yeah.
Slight and brief history. We had about 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, an instance where one of our favorite sons in the investment banking community spent a disproportionate amount of his disposable income on narcotics and went and stuffed a couple of
you actually kind of want to run down I think the first thing to think about with this is actually that part of the reason this gets a name,
mm-hmm.
If you're reading the local papers, nearly every murder in Hong Kong, they're so few and far between that they all get special names.
Yeah. Right, that's right.
That, when people talk about, crimes coming or another, the murder rate here is...
Mm. Everybody's a supervillain in this town.
Yeah.
This has really made the headlines for two reasons. One is the spectacular nature of the crime.
Which, not to go full recap, but it did involve one woman being
folded up inside a suitcase and being left out on a veranda. Yes.
Right, right.
Balcony.
Balcony, sorry. Oh.
And it's, you know, on the one hand, we have that kind of, you know, it's that kind of story. On the other hand, it's making the papers because Hong Kong is in the papers.
Right.
In a way that, you know, completely unrelated developments have.
Right. It looks, I mean, as, and this is probably the main reason we are broadcasting to you now, to set the record straight. The streets are not afire. We are not living in a fiery, chaotic hell. I mean, I'm not. I mean,
it's not Arkham City.
Yeah, it's not. Even though everybody is a supervillain in their spare time, it is the streets are not awash in a crime spree. In fact, I mean, I'd mentioned this to the other day. Sort of the Occupy movement, Occupy Central, being of course the student slash general discontent protest movement that's occupying not Central but other parts of Hong Kong.
It's a glorious piece of Hong Kong's indefatigable anti-nominalism.
Right. And they will carve that on my tombstone. The
only if it's really big.
The Occupy movement is kind of like if Wes Anderson did a remake of The Year of Living Dangerously. In that,
wow.
It's the protesters were students, all bespectacled and polite and, you know, well-mannered and hipsterish.
Yes.
And
truly a delight to have to any kind of protest.
Exactly. The best protesters you would want.
I was down on Sunday and was... I went down, had a look around. There's a lot of craft going on. I stopped into the study area and signed up to tutor. Helped out a young man with his IELTS for an hour. And during
is
that,
that a,
time...
Is that a ligament issue?
It's an English as a Second Language exam.
Yeah, yeah.
One of a kind of endless series that students between high school and through college do here.
Right.
There are all sorts of placements. So we talked about, you know, how to deal with these essays. And as we were sitting there, first someone came around with cake.
Mm-hmm.
Then someone came around with homemade soup. Then there were Ferrero Rocher, seriously.
Right.
It was like... No, protesters who are spoiling us.
Right.
So it's like the best revolution ever.
Yeah, exactly. It's polite, it's well catered. What more could you want except perhaps actual democratic change?
Yeah.
Well,
we got the desserts covered. Can we actually make good on some of the original?
Well, I think that, you know, I'm not optimistic about substantive political change. I'm very optimistic about that old saw, consciousness raising.
Right.
Because, you know, these people, I work for an unspecified higher education institution whose opinion I do not represent.
Right. Noted.
But, you know, these are my students.
Mm-hmm.
Our students go on to, you know, be civil servants.
Yep.
Be the representatives. You know, in 10 years, in 15 years.
Right.
Well, there will be people in office who have had this experience.
Right.
And these are the only people actually thinking about Hong Kong as a place with a future.
Right. And it's
any
pretty,
kind of future.
It's pretty ballsy to have, you know, college kids sort of take on the largest and most totalitarianist communist regime on the planet, even if they're not doing anything other than having an extended study break in the middle of the road.
Well, I think they're really using the incongruity, and they're using all sorts of things that one might think of as disadvantages of Hong Kong life as
right.
advantages in the protest, including, you know, being well organized. That's not something we usually think about as being a big help for social upheaval.
Right.
Doing things together at the same time. All wearing, large groups of people wearing the same T-shirt.
Right.
All of these things that are, you know, still,
recycling.
Yes, recycling. There's, you know, things that they have not actually been able to do. You know, the Hong Kong city government has not been able to do
yeah,
recycling,
exactly.
pedestrianization, you know, all sorts of issues about sustainability. So it's become a kind of lab of a more humane version of the city. And, you know, everybody stopped talking about the Causeway Bay bit because really they should have pedestrianized that bit of street
a long time ago.
It's actually knows, you know, it's probably, you know, I know that people have various points of view about how this is affecting, you know, how this is affecting especially kind of low, you know, independent businesses.
Right.
But I suspect they're getting more foot traffic.
Causeway Bay's traffic problems are no worse than they were before the protests closed down the road.
They've improved.
Yes.
And again, we are in a tiny couple of islands in a peninsula that have among the highest population density in the world.
Yeah.
8 million people
crammed
into... You know how... I was going to look this up, too. You know how everybody says, an area the size of Rhode Island plus Delaware. It's like, I have no comparison point.
I'd say smaller than Rhode Island.
Smaller than Rhode Island.
And when you actually take into account this, it's quite a small proportion of land in Hong Kong that's actually inhabited.
Right.
If we have mountains that people do not tread on.
That's right.
In the middle.
40%
at least,
of the land.
At least mostly don't build on.
Yes. You know that is 40% of Hong Kong's
except for cell phone towers.
Yeah.
So of that, in that 60%, 8 million people are crammed, and many of them are politely sitting in the middle of the street doing their homework.
Well, it's maybe a better use of that, that six-lane highway. The air quality has improved.
Yeah. So, Lishi, were you going to draw some grand narrative theory connecting off-their-head investment bankers folding Indonesians into suitcases to the grander aspirations of Hong Kong's democracy?
Well, the government's kind of main line, well, they've had two lines of attack against the protest movement. One is that, you know, one is basically to hire and or inspire various groups of people to...
tattooed and permed and looking like extras and some
in a
sort
movie
of
we may discuss later.
Yes, exactly.
And to try and get both them and police to do work that should actually be governmental work about this. This is kind of the method. But their primary kind of rhetorical tactic has been to say this is doing Hong Kong's reputation damage.
Yeah.
And this is not... I think it's actually probably doing just the opposite.
No, I know. You know, everyone's working around. It's not, you know, as you say, it's not Arkham City. We aren't sort of we're not going on nightly purges. We're, you know.
Well, it's suddenly become a kind of politically interesting place.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that my hitherto mentioned university is going to get more interesting IR students. In the next 4 years, people are going to apply who wouldn't have people who were interested in international relations and you know who were you know
like
looking at Hong Kong as a place to just kind of you know stand in a more familiar language and look at China. Now there are going to be people coming to be interested in here in a different way.
So you're telling me it's just going to get more crowded here. Great.
Yeah.
Thanks,
but
protesters.
Maybe with slightly more
cool.
interesting people. But, you know, on the other side of that, you have these, you know, the financial industries, which, you know, for whom we are preserving
right, exactly.
this,
so they could wantonly murder sex workers in their off time.
And, I don't think that's a real contest there. What would you prefer?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we are in the dystopian present. Headquarters here in Wan Chai overlooking the aforementioned red light district. And it is, it's what always strikes me as sort of wonderfully unique about Hong Kong is the fact that early in the morning, when I come to the office, 10:38, you're kind of briskly walking down the street, and there are still people careening out of the little basement holes like Neptune 3 and the firehouse, you know, people are bumping into you as they're on the tail end of their
bender.
Yeah. Or their bender. And it's a Tuesday. So it's a, like their Tuesday bender. There's a wonderful
sort of... It's a 7-day
like,
a week city.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, those two worlds kind of exist simultaneously and are often...
At least until the delivery trucks arrive.
Right. Moving swiftly on.
Yeah.
So...
Thank you.
Thank you. We're absolutely no folks have been injured in the recording so far this evening. that we know of.
And hopefully no resident permits will be taken away.
No. When you look out at what... I mean, Hong Kong... And Stephen, you probably have a better sort of long-term perspective on this. If you look at on sort of the global geek properties that interest genre fans, Hong Kong seems to get the big movies, the big releases, pretty quickly relative to...
Yes. But for a very short time.
Depends when, I guess.
And doesn't you know gets a very funny cycle of the middle of the market or the middle brow,
such as
there are you know all sorts of first release. Basically, if it doesn't have explosions in it, it might come here anytime within a year or more of its release if it comes here. But if it
with explosions,
it will open
be
the
there
same
right
way.
Well, but it will still close after 2 weeks. And if you didn't see it, you missed your chance.
Keanu Reeves movie came here pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But I mean, Keanu's sort of put a lot of legwork into Hong Kong over the last couple of years. So he's a known quantity. But the reason I bring this up is obviously there's been all this leaked, not leaked, sort of purposely leaked Avengers 2 buzz on the interwebs. And I'm wondering if where do you think we're going to fall on the release date for it? I mean, that obviously is the biggest tentpole thing that's coming down the pipes. Are we going to be first?
Well, Marvel's always done it like they do it around the world type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe like more than less, we've gotten a week earlier than the States. There have been a few where we've gotten it. I remember bragging about seeing Iron Man 3 first. Before America, for the States got it, and then I had to wait a week to wait.
Right.
That has happened for a lot of their sequels.
Wasn't
but
that good?
For the films that they know will be huge, they've done worldwide releases all at the same time. I know Avengers was everywhere at once.
I think Thor was everywhere. It used to be that things were. You know, really delayed through a series of premieres by everybody.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And, you know, basically the landscape of piracy has changed all that. So
right.
Many more simultaneous
releases.
Here
we are sitting in one of the major pirate coves.
Well, it's not just that. It's not just that. It's just that it's, you know, we're also not sending out, you know, large canisters of film.
Right.
And yet they still do ridiculous releases, despite that. But with something like Avengers 2, I can't remember what date they've chosen for the big release, but for really big ones like that, when in a time of year where there are special dates around the world, they will stagger it to hit those special dates.
Right.
And there is like a sweet spot during summer where there are a bunch, and no matter what... How big the film's going to be, they want to get those big 3-day weekends wherever they can.
Right.
Yeah.
So given that we assume that we're going to be amongst sort of the first wave of those that...
Yep, that way we can get a lot of pirated copies off to China before it opens there.
Phew. Praise the Lord. But what do we all think of what has been leaked out? Well, not leaked, I guess it's all official.
Released.
Okay, fine.
There is no such thing as a leak any longer.
Right.
There's just social media relations.
Right. Okay.
Unless
so did you dig it off of an edit bay? Right.
I mean, I think I got a Solid Avengers trailer through Refugees of Spill on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Some dude put it on there. It's like just about maybe 12 to 24 hours before the real thing came up.
Right.
So I don't even know if that's really a leak. I mean, maybe somebody got it early and...
Yeah,
they were going to release it anyway.
Pre-release.
So I don't really know.
With withdrawn.
But like something like the Expendables 3, then yes, that clearly was a leak.
But no, that was a hopeful viral leak.
That everybody was just waiting on.
That was a desperate leak.
Yeah, I know. Sort of.
No, they're suing the... I think the company was suing one of those torrent sites.
So they've gone with the producer's plan.
Right.
Guessing people don't like these Expendables here.
So,
but anyway.
Yeah. Avengers 2.
Sure.
Yay, nay, from what you've seen, what do you...
I'll go and see it, but I'm kind of tired of doing Marvel's work on this.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marvel does an excellent job of promoting themselves.
And I bet people get paid really well.
Right.
Whereas I'm
and
know,
now that they're cross-pollinating with Disney properties, I mean...
My 100 Hong Kong dollars will be, you know, smacked right down on the table.
Right.
I still have a double feature of Avengers 2 and Pinocchio coming.
What? Oh, wait. So your grand unification theory is that that's why James Spader is sort of crooning that particular song.
Did you notice that
Crisis
the entire tune
on Dumbo.
Was a
Crisis
was
Dumbo.
A synth slowed down
Dumbos.
Version of the song?
Yeah. Yeah,
playing throughout the whole thing.
No, I know, but
it's just it's horribly obvious. They would have found some other property to go with had they never gotten bought by Disney.
Okay,
I don't see the effect that much myself.
You don't think that the synergies are creating like extra. Extra
movies?
Extra dollars for, I mean...
Not in the content itself.
No.
I don't really...
Well, I think it's obviously, you know, allowing them to move across these multiple platforms.
Right. Well, that...
And introduce Jiminy Cricket as a kick-ass addition to the Avengers.
That's right. Yeah. Right there on
you
Tony Stark's shoulder.
You didn't know he was a ninja.
I did not know.
Have a drink,
comes
Tony.
By night, lives
Jiminy... I'm trying to sort of work ninja into Jiminy Cricket, and I'm failing. Moving on swiftly.
Ninja-y cricket.
Yeah, but then there's going to be
better trademark. That
and then
right
in
now.
Jiminy, Avengers Agent 3, there's going to be a Jiminy Cricket, Rocket Raccoon Smackdown, and nobody wants that. Or maybe everybody.
That wouldn't go well.
So
Jiminy's got an umbrella.
So if we accept that this is a given, and this is kind of this, you know, seminal event that we just all must lean into.
Yeah.
I mean, at least at a very visceral level, what you've seen, has it made you happy? Sad?
Trailers lie for me. I didn't watch anything for Interstellar, and that paid off really well. So, I don't really... I think they are going to get overstuffed at some point. And this feels like it's teetering on that. Because
right.
they're adding Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch. And then, I don't know.
In addition
but
to
opens
Jiminy
up
Cricket.
For the Ant-Man stuff.
Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Cricket's
Ant-Man.
Exactly.
Tie-in. Well, they'll use anything to distract you from a Wasp subplot on that.
Right.
Okay.
Nobody's
there. Social issues.
The Seven Insects of Victory.
Wrong company.
Oh, right, sorry. Dang.
Well, we've just gotten Mockingbird on, just appeared on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which was the greatest divorce plot in comic books.
Okay.
For about 20 years. But they're having to mess around with it because of maintaining...
You actually maintain a ranking on greatest divorce arcs
they
in
may,
comics?
They may have been...
Oh, yes.
But you haven't, seen my extensive post.
Yeah.
But no. The whole point of West Coast Avengers,
right,
was divorce. It wasn't even like metaphor.
It was
for divorce.
California.
It was
right,
about
yeah.
divorce.
Right.
Yeah.
So you know, but they're bringing that in. Of course, they can't. They can't have her primary ex-wifeness be with Hawkeye because. They're not bringing Jeremy Renner on, and you know
he's a movie star now.
Yes, though. Screamed
that.
But I think that one of the great questions as Marvel becomes omnimedia,
right.
Is you know, they are on, in some respects, thriving on aspects of their continuity. They're eating other aspects of their continuity. In some cases, it's doing well for them. I think it's really helped Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. immensely.
Mm-hmm.
In other cases, actually, like, you know, the rumored slash announced casting of Doctor Strange.
Right.
Very pleased to see Benedict Cumberbatch enter this universe, but...
You don't want to see him in a mustache.
I don't want to see him in a mustache, and B...
so long as it's a long mustache.
Long mustache, and... Damn. No, but you see, the perfect person to play this role is Tom Hiddleston.
Right.
If you cannot picture this in your head, you haven't seen Jim Jarmusch's Only Lovers Left Alive.
I have seen Only Lovers Left Alive.
And if you have seen that, you are thinking, you just take that kind of, the world weariness.
Yeah.
The kind of supernatural damage, the romanticism.
Right.
Voila, Doctor Strange. He's not a character who is, you know...
Liked?
Well, there's that. But he's also not a character who's kind of, you know, whose analyticalness. No. Yes, he has a doctorate.
Right. No, he just has an MD. He's not a doctorate. He is a doctor.
He's like a doctor, but like he's not a, you know, it's not, he's not like a supernatural detective.
Well, he may have an honorary doctorate in douchebaggery, but other than that.
What is your beef with The Strange?
Hey, Strange.
Okay.
I've never read it. I just downloaded it.
Well, I think it's bringing
it had nice Steve Ditko art early on, but you know, after that, all interest and relevance.
Nice bringing Steve in the kind Ditko of art.
Fuck you.
I think bringing in, you know, we've started to bring in the you know, the kind of galactic mode with Guardians of the Galaxy, which amazingly was not terrible.
Right.
And
oh, really?
Now. Yeah, it could have. Think of it. Could have been like the Fantastic Four,
but it was fun.
But it was
no. I said it was not terrible. I thought it was fun. That was great.
I always hoped Star Wars would end up being fun.
You know, when I first saw it, it reminded me of the first time I saw The Fifth Element. That's what it was like. This fantastic, crazy, psycho event, like just with good art and stuff.
It had far more rich characters and more interesting interactions than The Fifth Element could have ever.
No, but just the experience of it.
But
right.
Yeah,
it was a complete
world that they created, a universe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it was imaginative.
Right,
yes.
Right.
And so they've actually successfully brought that in, which had defeated several other Marvel adaptations. And, you know, if they can actually do that also with the kind of occult strand, then we're looking at a kind of quite a rich tapestry.
It's hard to say because of the way they shied back from the whole godhood of Thor and reduced it to this pseudoscience.
They never really defined it that.
Right.
But that was just how to marry
science,
things.
Magic, right. You know.
And I know the supernatural is very big on TV these days, but for some reason in the larger context of superhero universe, I think people are still afraid of delving into that.
Well, this is always a problem with the Avengers.
So
everyone has to end up being kind of equally powerful. So if someone is actually God, it's a problem.
Yeah.
But not like just a God, not the ego. So hang on. So as you say, sort of.
Sorry, keep going.
No.
Why does
this,
God?
This was the point of Watchmen.
Oh man! Don't
what
the next episode. Put a big fucking pin in that and move on. So you're saying, though, that the whole sort of de-magicification of Asgard was A, problematic to you, but B, are you saying that Doctor Strange, and as much as you hate the mode magician, that's going to be Marvel, like cinematic Marvel's approach, is that he's going to do magic, but it's really going to be science magic?
I'm afraid they'll steer more into that direction, because the whole problem with Thor was not that they... It was basically that they were afraid to embrace magic. They were afraid to embrace the idea of a comic world where anything is possible. They try to root it too much in as close to a reality as you can. And they avoided that in most of their movies, but then when they got to Thor, they chickened out. They backpedaled.
No, Thor was the changing point, actually, for everything.
because that was the that was like, oh, how are they going to do this?
And I thought, yeah, by backpedaling, nice. They balanced it.
They even updated Natalie Portman into like an astrophysicist in the original. She's like a nurse or something, right? Right?
Well, Jane Foster, she was a nurse.
I watched the cartoon,
but they've only done. But they've missed a whole sort of key element towards the original.
Thor,
which is Thor's like a gimpy dude with a. With a wooden stick.
I found a stick in a cave. I think I'll use that.
that origin story. Yeah.
Right. But that's where sort of...
Yeah.
His human contacts are...
Right. Yeah. Right.
Are also
they sort of dispense
that
with that, so why wouldn't they update...
But as we've seen, Whedon has tried to embrace more of that magical aspect of Thor. I mean, in the Avengers, and now in Avengers 2 trailer, you see with the whole... No one can pick it up. They're embracing the idea of something a little otherworldly.
So maybe they'll
ease back into an idea of accepting magic in their universe. But I really have trouble.
Well, it's not really. It's not really a weak point of Joss Whedon's.
No, because the Hulk couldn't pick it up in the Avengers.
Sure. Right.
Like, I would see you're saying it's underplayed. Definitely.
Well, no, I
think it's died away from it.
I think they haven't defined it clearly, which is fine, which is why it works.
Right.
Yeah. And they just say...
And the Cumberbatch is going to make it all
better. And I think they can...
Better.
They'll be able to stretch it with Doctor Strange. Because now you have...
It depends, it just takes steps, I think.
Yeah.
It may be
that they're going to embrace it in that way. And with Guardians, it showed that they can do more genre bending with their movie verse.
Yeah.
So... Maybe we'll see them branch out into true Dormammu.
Yeah, well, and if they really kind of make the kind of, you know, the early 80s, you know, kind of supernatural jerk of it, it will be, you know, that will have achieved a new tone.
Right. Okay, so
I don't know,
quick casting call here. Sort of assuming that they're going to, well, Iron Man, whichever one had the Mandarin in it, with that.
So
they've been playing around with sort of updating sort of the gross racial stereotypes. Quick casting call: who's going to play Benedict Cumberbatch's loyal Oriental manservant?
I notice you use the term Oriental
because I'm trying to make a point.
I think that's apropos. I think we're very likely to. No. Either we're going to get a kind of...
he'll be
chain.
Black.
Yeah.
We could
get that.
Yeah.
And we could also be a woman.
Ah.
Because this is... One of Marvel's maneuvers is to kind of...
I really
not changing.
One about Doctor Strange.
Okay, so he has...
You are blessed.
Yeah.
I'm going to read it, though.
Churlish.
Yeah. So he has... He's like Kato or something?
But less badass, like much more subservient.
Okay. Kato without actually doing anything other than getting tea.
Yeah.
Oh,
like
he,
lots
he wears
of tea.
Those pointy collars. Someone has to iron them.
Oh,
that's,
I see.
That's
right. Yeah.
Set up.
And he does have.
Don't worry, Doctor Strange. Meditate. I'll get the door.
So let's just. You don't know anything about him, but imagine the setup. Sort of, you know, magic or science magic-y,
right.
Bohemian in Greenwich Village.
Right.
Has a manservant.
Yeah.
He may or may not be Asian. Or a woman servant.
It'd probably be some hipster kid that's studying AI or something, right?
Okay. Do we have no names?
I have no names. For one thing, I've gotten very old and I don't know any young actors' names because I just don't give a shit.
But he wouldn't be young. The manservant would have, by definition, because he's not a Kato, because he's not like a.
He'll be young.
He'll
have to be young. It's demographics.
So he doesn't fight or anything. Just does,
no.
Does
he
do lesser magic?
But he will fight
in this incarnation.
Possibly have some other... Well, I think, especially if Doctor Strange continues to kind of mainly wave his hands around in a kind of...
magic way.
2 hours of
hand
waving.
Then I think it's incredibly likely that
we'll have a Tai Chi
his sidekick will be able to kind of
wave his feet.
You know, break stuff.
Doc, just kick him in the nuts. There he goes down.
Now, would you say this kid is like an integral part of Doctor? Is it like
no?
They don't do Robin for Batman.
No. But he is. No,
like Jarvis became
the AI
tech.
Yeah.
Perhaps he will become.
Okay. And in the comics, like he does sort of support Doctor. I mean, he's finding books, he's making tea,
it's all a cerebral process
being the Doctor.
Right. He's warning the other heroes away because
the doctor's
in an astral plane.
Sounds like a research student.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, there's a whole lot of looking over his book.
He does research for him. Like,
he's like a TA. He's
doing postgraduate.
Pretty much.
Right. Okay.
With all the excitement that implies.
So write in with your guesses as to who is going to be the Doctor's faithful manservant / TA.
Fine. Yeah.
Moving on.
If I could just, I don't know, just throw Jay Chow in there. I don't know why. He already did Kato, though. I don't know if that...
Did he?
Yeah.
That's okay. Right. You can cross.
I'll just throw that in there. I don't know.
Right.
Once you're in the comic world, you can go wherever you wish.
Yeah.
Fine.
Hey, Brandon Routh is now the Atom. What do you want?
Really?
Yeah.
Man, oh man.
And has a lot more personality than... when he was headlining a film.
Right. Okay. Moving on. Oh. You all have seen it. I've not. Interstellar. I want to pose this question to you as I can from the seat of ignorance, having not watched it, but read.
So I'm not going to spoil it for you.
No. I am spoiler-proof. But it is worth mentioning that we might tread into spoiler territory, so
okay.
Be noted that we need to make the appropriate spoiler sound effect.
Right. Wow.
The owl is in the field.
Yeah.
We'll work on that. We'll edit that in post.
The owl spoils everything.
He does.
So you don't want to review it, but you want to talk about how people are talking about it.
Right, yeah.
Okay, I want to be
super meta about this. You guys can review it as well, but take this as a starting point.
Sure.
What's been interesting to note is that all the kind of more genre-specific, many of the more genre-specific review sites, including guys at oneofus.net, took...
That's you, Chris.
took great umbrage at the mumbo jumbo sciencey bits and the tendency to kind of make things look like hard science, but yet could be easily poked holes through. Like, you know, all the black hole stuff was apparently garbage. We saw.
You mean the interior of the black hole? Because the exterior of the black hole, it's actually fairly hard science at this point.
Okay, we'll refer you
and
to
most
a few
of the theoretical
around...
concepts are very new, but very gaining respect.
Let me just conclude on this. Regardless, most of the genre sites or reviewers said two things. One, the hard science was kind of BS. Two, most of the tropes were kind of wheeled out from the last quarter century of science fiction. So the genre world took issue with it for overselling its hard science premise and under-delivering on original sci-fi concepts. But the literary, quote-unquote, review world... was actually quite taken with it, both in terms of its pageantry and vision and Nolan's kind of view of space, et cetera, et cetera. So the guys that kind of reviewed it, not thinking about it as a science fiction movie, gave it a pass. I'm generalizing, but that's
the
more
movie
or less...
people just they need to read a book. And
yes,
that's the problem. I think with, that's what's annoying about these stupid sci-fi people that like on blogs and stuff, because they need to learn how to read a sci-fi. No, you have to understand. A sci-fi science fiction. I'm talking about like not Star Wars stuff. I mean, like real science fiction is about you're an ideas movie, right? You're talking about big ideas that you're asking all of these questions that you don't have an answer for. That's okay. You just keep asking the questions. That's why they have these debates in movies. They did the same thing with Transcendence too. They did the same thing.
Well, this is the difference between genre and actually thinking about genre. And I'm not saying that the literary critics have a mark on this, because I'm not sure that this is actually one of their strengths at this juncture.
Mm-hmm.
And fandoms,
right?
Where we're talking about, you know, kind of a mastery of a relatively limited canon, and people are very interested in very close interconnections, performing this on some level.
Right.
But what's interesting about this as a film that might be seen as crossing over that boundary is that of things that have been released in the last few years, it is some of the most kind of pure science fiction. And this is not to... Not
pure red hard?
Throwback.
Well, it's...
To authority.
Okay, well, wait this out for a moment. But in terms of not being a story set in space that is Snow White, or a story that is, you know, set on a dystopian version of our Earth, which is really a delusive computer, and you are Jesus, like The Matrix.
Okay.
This is not a setting for a story,
right, that
has been told time and again.
Yeah.
This is a story where space, however conceived, I actually think the kind of the realness of the science is kind of less important than the kind of its place in the story,
right?
But in which is actually dependent on its setting for the things that happen,
right?
So it's being motivated by the debate of these ideas.
Well, and the plot is driven by these ideas rather than character. This is one of the film's problems. I mean, the film's problems are problems of genre as well as its strengths.
Okay.
But it's
also, and that didn't bog down for you, or
there were moments, but I did think that I thought that things that I thought were very good about the film. I thought they did a great apocalypse. And I think it's a kind of incredible mark of how far we've come since The Day After Tomorrow. Exactly. But
I don't see that as a mark.
Well, I just think that the idea that, you know, what we're actually, you know, that it's very kind of carefully laid out.
That the apocalypse will be gradual.
The apocalypse
will
gradual.
Sneak up on you.
That it's, you know, kind of generated by the very steps that people
kind
take
like
to
the
save themselves.
And
that it's a kind of rolling crisis,
right?
And
you can't plan quarter to quarter.
And that, you know, so I thought that part of it was particularly well done. You know, other things that were kind of interesting to see him work with were the parts of the plot that were most inevitable, like, you know, there's a point at which, you know, we're going to meet someone who has sent themselves off possibly to die on this planet.
Right.
And, you know, we're going to find them alive means that we're going to find them alive with the space madness.
Right, yes, the space madness.
That you know this from the first time someone says, he is the best of us. You know that he will be bringing the space madness.
Did you guys ever read that Rick Moody book about Mars, or the fingers in the title?
No, I'm thinking of Ren and Stimpy.
Of course you are. No. There was Rick Moody, you know, the ice storm dude, his last novel, and this kind of relates to it. Sort of whenever sort of serious literary guys write science fiction, they do so from a point of reverence and almost a place of passion that almost makes them too slavishly faithful to the trope. His novel, which was a literary novel, but it was based on, you know, an ill-fated mission to Mars where
right.
the crew went there and everybody got space madness and some of them turned into space zombies with space madness. And so the layering upon layering of all the tropes of it and it just, when that happens, when so many of those things that you've seen before, and I know, you can't be completely original in your, you can't reset everything in your examination of what it would be like to go to space. But we tend to fall back upon...
Twilight kind of did that, actually, for vampires.
A good standard number of things
that just makes me happy how much that upsets you.
Sorry, that to you. Do I have to say it again? I'm another member of this group. Oh, fuck off.
Just keep going.
No. That was all I was saying. But my point is this, sort of, maybe... I mean, your point about genre versus fandom is well taken, but in some ways, like those that aren't fanatical fans sometimes seem to settle too easily for sort of standard mechanisms that...
Here's the thing. Oh, sorry.
You're the thing.
I'm the fan. they're letting their... I mean, and this is maybe Christopher Nolan's work in itself, because he makes movies where it points, makes you analyze or look for plot holes more, just the way he makes his movies, like Memento or something like that. But the way he plays with plot structure will naturally make you, watch it more meticulous.
So you're on your guard
That's one factor of why fans act like this with his films.
Okay.
And they're more prone to picking those things.
Mm-hmm.
I partly think it's also stupid YouTube sites like CinemaSins or How It Should Have Ended, just spreading this disease of...
people who know better.
What's, hey,
call it like you
let's
see it,
nitpick
man.
Everything. And, there's a guy with a watch in Titanic. Ugh, ruined it for me. Like, that's kind of...
They didn't have watches back then.
Yeah. And then, so, it's that. And then, second of all, it's people don't... They don't feel the movie is the problem. Because this is a very... I think this movie is about humanity. I think it's about, like, a dad and his daughter having... I think that's the central heart of the movie. And I think you need to feel these things through those ideas. And I think that's what got to me in the end. And I think people always overlook that kind of thing. And I think Nolan's... let me say this one more thing. Mm-hmm. He started as like a cold, kind of very heady filmmaker, and I think how he's improved is not just the scope or whatever he's doing, it's that he's actually being more fuzzy.
He's hard.
He's letting the character's humanity breathe more.
Christopher Nolan, give me a hug.
There are two things. One is that what I was saying about kind of these genre points coming, on some level, you have to fulfill these expectations,
right?
Or you are not actually operating within a genre framework.
Mm.
So you know it's coming, and then it's a question of how they're going to handle them, rather than necessarily all developments being unanticipatable. But two, one of the things about this particular movie that really brings up this issue about kind of, what is the human and the humane in...
Because they have to base
that. Is the kind of tremendous signaling of now I am taking a page out of the book of Stanley Kubrick. This is done on every...
Are there sort of slow churning space?
My God, yes.
Things look like they move slowly in space because they're moving at such speed.
He goes to the trouble of de-skilling the whole of North America so that NASA can produce spacecraft that look more like the spacecraft in 2001. Right.
The whole point is
but and the robot in this, which is a kind of actually rather kind of clever, the robot is also the robot
it's
and
like
the pylon
is
at the same time.
No, he's
a hell
kind of the opposite.
Up.
Okay,
he's La. I'm just kidding. He's the opposite of La.
So he's a Singaporean.
All right, so. But final thoughts on that, and sort of
is the key, because he gets away with this kind of metaphysical because he's always setting up these kind of intense contrasts with human nature and the inhuman human universe, and Nolan does not actually depersonalize his universe.
Well, if Nolan had Arthur C. Clarke working with him, it might have been a little different.
It's a much warmer film than 2001.
In defense of the science of Interstellar, if they choose to embrace magic fully with Doctor Strange, it will be a show. Because magic has logic and rules the way that we envision magic. Yeah. Far more so than the human mind can comprehend the logic and rules of quantum physics.
Right.
The things that are hypothesized, and some of which were shown in this, only some, only the barest minimum of quantum physics made it into this movie, are so beyond normal people's ability to absorb, because we're not trained for it. We grow up thinking in set mechanical ways so that we can survive in society. Short-term thinking so that we can survive the day. We don't think in larger scale concepts that are actually on an incredibly small scale.
We get it.
Which is exactly
we're not
why
worthy of Christopher Nolan, I get it.
No, we're not worthy of quantum physics yet.
Oh.
But Christopher Nolan took a stab at it by having a quantum physicist actually give all the information necessary for the science aspect of the film.
Okay.
Which is why you can't watch a science fiction movie expecting science fact. That was my whole argument.
Okay,
you have to take it as a series of hard science. No, you can't expect first of all, it's not dramatic. It might not be that interesting to experience. Maybe somebody can do it one day. I don't know.
But also, hard science can only take you to a certain point.
Right.
Then we get to a realm where we can only speculate.
Because, as I was saying before, science fiction to me is about humanity's when our skill, our technique, or our technology can reach to like unlimited levels, where would our humanity go? I think any science fiction genre is covering that question.
Right.
So the science in the genre itself has to be further than your humanity to be a worthy story to tell, right? So I don't think you can watch any science fiction as science fact, because there's not enough science to cover the mountain wheel, because we don't know.
Right.
So
you might have cut a few corners or misinterpreted some.
Right.
But
and I don't think that's important.
He was sort of swinging for it. He was taking a big man-sized attempt to figure out where humans go.
He's trying to make people think for once when they're watching a movie.
Oh, for crying.
I think it's, I think this is actually an issue about art. In that, we can set
put
up
that
we can,
can of worms back on the shelf, Felicia.
we can represent anything. It has to make sense as an artwork.
Right.
And
we can do that.
Whether it's none of the science in, despite people having mobile phones today, none of the science in Star Trek.
Right.
Means a darn thing. It's like shouting stuff in a hospital drama.
Right.
When it works, it works.
No, what Star Trek to me is not about the science. It's about pure instinct versus pure logic and pure humanity, all fighting about how to solve something, and the solution is never one of each side. You have the Doctor, you have the Spock and Captain fighting over how to solve this thing.
Right.
It's never, nobody ever really wins.
Are we talking
combination?
We're talking about Star Trek.
Kirk usually wins, but another day.
Okay.
Big pin in that. We gotta move on to. We're just digging that rabbit hole.
It's a 3-hour movie.
I know,
how
man.
Can we possibly discuss it in 20 minutes?
But if I can give anything, watch it without expecting the science facts.
I think
right.
the key thing is to watch it without listening to us.
Or to watch it and try to actually enjoy it because it's a movie.
Yeah, that would be cool.
You and your revisionist thinking. All right, moving on to peccadilloes and proclivities, personal picks. And if I can be more sort of punchy in my not prediction. Damn, I almost had it there.
Alliterate.
I'm going to move on to everybody's personal picks for the week. What have you been reading, watching, absorbing? Couple, three things. Alicia, go.
I have been
I've mostly been reading, though also catching up on a little television, but I have just started, so it's not a review, it's just a kind of shout-out, the latest installment in Ben Aronovich's Rivers of London, however many we're on, maybe we're on the fifth.
Okay.
And,
yeah, you've mentioned that before.
And this is called Foxglove Summer. It came out today. And the whole series has been great fun. And
book jacket blurb?
The series as a totality is magic is real. You'll be pleased to know.
it has laws and logic.
Laws, logic, and a police force. It's a policier where, you know, we have a kind of standard entry character who... you know, is a young policeman who's not very good at his job, but discovers that he is actually able to kind of tap into this world of magic and is recruited by this branch of the CID. Set in London, very very much interested in kind of folklore and city stories of London. It's very much a thing, and in it various. Things, including all the rivers of London, both the extant ones and the buried ones, are characters, and are you know, all sorts of aspects of the city are made flesh and participate in these plots, and they're really they're very zippy. But they actually cast back to the other things that I've been reading. I've been reading a series of books called the either the Mathago Cycle or the Ryhope. Wood Cycle by Robert Holdstock. They start in...
When you say either, are there different sort of...
They're referred to both ways when you kind of read about them as a series.
Who do the... What do those in the really know refer to them as?
I've been thinking the first book in the series is called Mathago Wood.
Mm.
So that's easy for me to remember. And they started being published in about 1984... they go right up to the author's death, which I think is in 2009. He published various other things at the same time. And they are...
Busy on the deathbed.
Yes, not, I think, all in 2009.
Right.
But he is... they are about the Wildwood. And...
You and the anthropomorphized woods and rivers and streams.
This is a series of books that has it has the familiarity of something that's had a lot of influence, although the series has largely been forgotten. You know, have you read anything lately or seen anything on HBO lately where the seasons seem to change in a way that indicates important developments for characters? Or indeed where parts of
autumn is nearly upon us.
European and Celtic Celtic history and mythologies are transmuted and play a major role in War of the Roses, like...
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Or indeed,
are you reading a kind of contemporary magic policier in which...
Right.
In which the Rivers of London are actual characters and in which Mr. Punch is projected backwards through time and things like this. So, anyway. So what happens in Mathago Wood is the... you have this ancient woodland in which collective memory and kind of ancestral stories generate actual physical forms, which are called by one of the characters Mathagos. And you have various characters who voyage into the wood to encounter these, to be... there's kind of quite an extended kind of series of plots. And it's there's also a lot of, these have had a kind of fairly big influence on Neil Gaiman. You could also recognize things from that.
Yeah.
It's tempered by a very kind of finely honed sense of horror, which keeps it from being too twee, which is really the sort of danger. and so there's quite a bit of Arthur Machen about them, quite a bit of Lord Dunsany. But it's kind of like Kipling's Puck of Poopspeak grew up and got both more Jungian and more viscerally terrible. And the books are structured.
I'm not sure. Are you recommending this?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. They're really worth reading, and they're really worth reading. And they're, you know, as fantasy goes, the quality of the writing is very good.
Okay.
The books are structured in a kind of very lightly interlinked way. So we often are following a character who's a minor character in the previous book. I'm told that by the end of the series, we actually kind of circle back to the beginning. But you have the sense of encountering versions of the previous book without repeating. And also part of the mechanism of this universe is that as people pass through this wood, they generate the wood and regenerate the wood. So they go. So each character is in some way in the imagination of the previous character, which might be hostile, which might be helpful. By the second and third book, it's getting away from a family romance around this, and it becomes very rich. So I would recommend them wholeheartedly.
Okay. And do you see so you're saying low on the twee, so we shouldn't see some sort of tweeny oriented movie? You know, we're not gonna see a YA.
I don't think anybody's gonna option these. You know, there are things about them like a massive cameo by mid-20th century folk composer Vaughan Williams as an interrogative character
that ain't gonna bring the kids out.
Yeah, we're not gonna see, you know,
right,
this on the big screen.
Steven, go.
So I'm doing only two things, I guess. I started the Constantine TV show because I really like that. That's the Hellblazer series.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that guy looks like him. I don't think that's always the best. But I think that's like why people would like, oh, I like the show, he's so much more than Keanu Reeves. But I think Keanu Reeves actually did capture something that was pretty Constantine. That's not,
at least he was smoking.
Yeah, that and
in some senses,
grouchier and someone who's living with his pain longer than this guy is. Maybe it's just something he's not communicating yet. Maybe they have long.
And they had Tilda.
They have Tilda Swinton. Yeah, I think. She was a good.
She was the best thing about that movie.
Yeah. So no. I mean, I don't think it's kind of like the Spider-Man and Amazing Spider-Man. I don't think they've gotten like they have aspects of that character in both, but it's not, there's no definitive one yet.
Right.
But I'll still keep watching it. Going through kind of a also Kung Fu phase. I just saw a new Donnie Yen movie, Kung Fu Jungle, which is going to lead up to that.
The
Wong Fei Hung movie too.
Okay.
Kung Fu Jungle. I'll review it on my podcast.
So give me the snap. So give a shout out to your other podcast, obviously, and then give us the snap review.
MofosIceSkating.com. The podcast is called Mofos Ice Skating Uphill. It's a reference to Blade, where he says, you know, some motherfuckers are always trying to ice skate uphill, and he kills Steven Dorff. That's the part.
That's the important
thing. That's right.
Yeah, this might have named so random.
It's the learning moment.
And then we'll review Kung Fu Jungle, John Wick, and Interstellar very soon. Kung Fu Jungle, I just to quote Tenacious D, I think I saw the best Kung Fu movie in the world, but it was just a tribute. It's a tribute. It's a nice tribute.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And are you going to see Tenacious D next month?
Not even next month. Later this month,
yeah.
Man.
Later they're coming. Coming. They're coming as well.
So Clock and Flap, which is Hong Kong's big sort
only.
Of big slash only
music festival. Yeah.
The Flaming Lips got signed up for Sunday, so that's
gonna be a fun show.
Yeah, I will be looking for my kids all weekend long there. Right. So, Kung Fu Jungle, yay or nay?
I think yay. Donnie has to give a shit for the film to be good, so he gave a shit about this one, and it was good.
There we go. And therefore. Okay.
Yeah, the previous one he didn't, and Indy wasn't good. It was a movie called Iceman. Also, Rise of the Legend was the remake of the Wong Fei-Hung movie. They're bringing Wong Fei-Hung back.
That's being released next week,
Next week, yeah. It's the role that
just remember time that for by Justin Timberlake.
What is?
Thank you.
I'm trying to I'm trying to connect them dots.
Bring Huang Fei Hung back.
Right, yes, of course.
Oh, right, yeah. Mm-hmm. They probably would, yeah, it's probably in the music, too.
That's right, yeah.
And is the role that made Jet Li famous.
Right.
In this Once Upon a Time in China series, they're doing kind of a Batman Begins-y kind of thing. It's like about his younger years, and which will be different. I don't know. I don't know what we'll do. I hope it's not empty.
Will the film be as desaturated as the trailer?
It is very color corrected. Yeah, definitely. It is.
All these new Hong Kong China joint ventures seem to be sort of just there's export duties on certain hues, and so they just leave them.
The Michael Bay horror movie effect, right? And just came over and we're all green and yellow now.
Right. No, but this is more. The trailer looked more yellowy, browny, like Xinjiang dusty, but it's not set in that part of China.
No, Wang Fei was from Guangdong.
Okay,
Canton. Yeah.
Just up the road, man.
Yeah.
So it should be lush and green. What's up?
And you said you saw the original films, the Jet Li. So those films were like about 97 fear. And so there was a scene in the first one where like a group of missionaries are coming into the town, and then up on the tea house you see like this band playing, like a Chinese band, and then they start fighting over volume and that's how the movie starts. It's about this fight of who's speaking more, and the love interest of Wang Fei Hung in the original was like his aunt, who came back from overseas. So she's sort of westernized, and there was a clash in how they. Like, they're falling in love, but they don't know how to communicate because she has this big camera, she likes these Western ideas, she speaks perfect English, and that was a lot of that. That dynamic was the most interesting.
And she's closely related to him.
She's like a distant aunt.
A distant
aunt. That's like the same age.
That was cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And that was fine back then. We loved incest back then.
An aunt, third, twice removed.
Yeah. So I hope they retain that stuff for me, because I thought that was more interesting.
So again, sort of bullet pointed, sort of why does China care about this particular hero? Where does he sit in the pantheon?
He was a real person. He was kind of made into a folk hero. He trained the local militia during Guangdong, and he was a doctor as well. That's all I know. Whatever you see in the movies is probably highly fictionalized.
Right. So a lot of, particularly a lot of the heroes out of southern China seem to be sort of great polymaths. They were, doctor, scholar, poet, warrior, mustachio, magician.
In the Jet Li ones, he was actually doing Tai Chi, but the actual Wang Fei Hung was a Hung Gar master, which is like all low stance and punching more.
Right.
And they don't never shown his style. I hope they do that. I don't know. We'll see.
There will certainly be punching.
There'll certainly be punching. Yeah, yeah. That's all I got.
that's enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Go.
Alright, currently my obsessions are, one of them is old 90s sci-fi show Babylon 5, as I've been showing kids. And amazingly enough, it grew in my appreciation of it. It's deeper and richer than I even remember it being, especially seeing it through the eyes of both children who haven't seen things of this nature, and it's coloring the way they view sci-fi storytelling, and through the eyes of my wife, who's a fully grown adult who has never seen it before and is completely engaged. Yeah. And she's not a geek.
As do we all.
And she's not his aunt.
She's not my aunt.
Not even twice removed.
Not yet.
Yeah.
So what? That is my one big obsession.
Was that like an Interstellar spoiler?
Yes.
Did you just dropped in there?
Just completely.
So like they're really entranced by the... Because it's
utterly engaged.
I never watched Babylon.
Now, many people have complained about the special effects of it. It was one of the first things to use computer effects in regular usage on TV.
Yeah.
Back when Star Trek was paying millions of dollars to do model work still, because computers just couldn't do realistic stuff, they were using Amiga computers that were doing a lot of gaming at the time to create environments that eventually became a signature for the show and improved over time as they got more money for the show.
but they don't detract from it mm-hmm. at all. The only thing that does detract is that on big TVs nowadays, the effect shots don't look as good because they were recorded in a lower quality to be broadcast on tiny little televisions in the old days.
Right.
And they don't have any of the master footage to redevelop the effects or reshoot the effects because all the computer, the company went out of business and all the computers were sold off for scrap and wiped. So none of the effects exist anymore. However, the story itself is what's engaging.
Sure.
And the kids are taken with each of the characters. They're complex characters whose stories change over the course of 5 years. They have arcs that are not just one season long. They are arcs that are a full 5 seasons long.
Uh-huh.
And you cannot believe these characters are the same ones who started until you watch it again and realize everything was there. The entire story moves and develops slowly. And this was in the days before TV was doing season-long arcs or attempting to do series-long arcs.
Right.
It was one of the forerunners of it. Anything else that was doing
the
series?
Broadcast?
1994.
20 years ago today!
1994. Nope.
He's
documented.
He's pointing his finger at us right now.
There were a few shows that feigned having a plan. Things like Twin Peaks had come out before, which was
you do not know that it were not based
exactly.
on Twin Peaks.
We were not.
No, but it pretended it had a larger plan. It laid out the idea that there was. With this, there actually is things that happen in the pilot episode for the entire series, which was a movie that came out a year before the series started, actually came to fruition at the end of the 5th season. And it was not, oh, we can use this later on. It was, this is set up for the end.
Take that, Damon Lindelof.
It was one creator doing almost all of the writing for it. It's, I think he wrote 92 out of 110 episodes. Only time that's ever been done. It was his baby, J. Michael Straczynski, and he might be coming out with a movie version in a couple of years. He's supposed to start writing
ever,
it this
if he
year.
He ever did anything else.
He's done a lot of other things. Lots of things. But he found a loophole in the rights that Warner Brothers has for it. They are only TV rights.
Oh.
Okay.
Interesting. They're actually sequelizing Twin Peaks.
Yes.
Twin Peaks.
They are
love that match.
Bringing it back.
That would be amazing.
20 years later, he'll emerge from the Black Lodge. Ooh.
Ooh. Well, you know, I did. You know, for a long while, Cathay was doing the whole run of Twin Peaks there, like sort of, you know, 3,000. Right. Yeah, Emirates. So yeah, and Emirates always has to just throw down. Like, you got 500 channels. I got 1,000 channels. You will never want to leave this aircraft. Ever.
Yes, they do.
But you know, when you can, on a long flight, you know, 16 hours, you can get through, if you're disciplined, you can get through most of Twin Peaks in one flight.
David Lynch,
If
you really force yourself.
You're feeling very disciplined.
Yes. All right.
Lynch.
Last pick.
Otherwise, I have an obsession with something that will be coming. DC Comics has been a huge letdown for the last, let's say, 2.5-3 years, ever since they wiped the board of all their characters and reinvented them in ways that had no direction, and then just waffled for a while. Well, it looks like
bring back Commandy.
But he's back. He's coming back in Multiversity. Grant Morrison looks like he's going to dig them out of a hole and save them. His Multiversity series has been very engaging and has been a continuation of the old DCU. And apparently, as of April, the multiverse is coming back. And it looks like the current New 52 may end up being what I had hopefully predicted as being a closed universe.
New Coke.
Exactly. And it looks like the doors have opened and it's just going to flood out because they've got a whole lot of two-issue series that will reintroduce old characters from the old New 52, the old non-52. And it might be interesting because it looks like it's very creator-driven instead of editorially driven.
To be clear, what's closed mean when you say closed?
Well, as in there's an endpoint.
Oh, great. Okay, yeah, I like
that.
Those.
They don't have
like
to maintain the
continuity. Like a pocket
universe.
Right. Oh, right, right. Oh, great.
Right.
Which yeah, is, you know, the classic way is it was all a dream.
Oh, right.
So I'm desperately hopeful about that because that's what I grew up with.
But so you're
since I was four, reading DC comics and seeing that characters develop and, you know, legacy characters develop and the continuity gets screwed up every couple of years, but big deal, they still come back to it eventually. Whereas Marvel pretends they maintain their continuity throughout.
Oh, okay.
And when it doesn't work, they just pretend it didn't happen.
Right. They just create another set of universes and everyone.
Are you excited for the Batman versus Superman movie?
No.
Okay.
I wish I was, but I'm not.
And why aren't you? I'm just curious.
Because DC just doesn't have a plan. They're owned by Warner Brothers, who has access to a huge library and a huge history.
Okay.
And then they just try to write their own thing. Sorry. They try to write their own thing for whatever movie 2 weeks before the regular shoot. They don't plan in advance. The greatest amount of planning they've done for their movies is to block out release dates for the next 5 years. In some cases, not even having a character slotted for that release date.
Well,
so which means
they're just busy playing.
You mean there's hope for my commandy future?
I think there is hope. I think it would be excellent.
If you can get that script to them,
I can
ASAP.
I'll do it tonight. Got a couple other things to clear up, but so you're you know,
not thrilled.
No, but. On that,
yeah.
Are you? I mean,
I am. I you probably, what you didn't like about it is kind of what I liked about it was they're doing something new. I've not seen this thing where like Lois knows, and they gave him Superman enough weaknesses for it to stretch, you know, a series of films, which is fine because I think the stronger he is, the less interesting he is. I think Superman is a writer's nightmare, and it's because he has no weaknesses.
Right.
Actually, no. There have been so many good stories written about him
being
incredibly powerful. Because what makes him a great character is not his power, it's his humanity. It's that he
is
the ideal of what humans could be. And the fact that
he's
not one of those characters who feels the need to kill in order to get his way. He always finds a way to win without killing.
I'm very down with that. I mean, I think that people have written very interesting things about Superman as a person named Grant Morrison has done
Has
really worked on this, kind of gotten into the interstices of the problem of this, you know, this like someone who is potentially the end of all stories.
But he's killed before.
And he'll kill again.
He killed once, and it was a huge controversy, but it was also set up in a story that was in a pocket universe that had nothing to do with the main world. No one knew he did it, and he did it because they were going to come and just continue killing. And it was a story where he had absolutely no choice. There was no prison he could put them in.
I just don't think that being darker, which has become a kind of shorthand for all sorts of forms of, you know, forms of realism that should be more diverse.
Right. I agree with
becoming, that. You know, being darker, being, you know, kind of less, you know, we're supposed to accept all of these flying people and yet accept that realistically he has to kill somebody.
Yeah.
And if you notice, on the set photos of the new movie, they actually brightened up his suit.
They have,
they are listening.
Some kind of criticism.
And I think he's going to pay for all of that damage he's done, because there's some protests.
Lois is still dressed like, you know, she dressed it in an American mall at the Limited in the early 90s.
And
they cannot fix it. They cannot fix it.
And the entire world knows who he is. It's like they
couldn't
hide anything about him.
You can't do that thing.
That will match up well with when Batman comes, who you're allowed to know his identity if you're an orphan.
Yeah,
right.
You're allowed to know his identity
if you're rich,
most of the people.
You strip away all the things that make these characters their own unique characters. This window dressing that allows you to tell stories within a confine.
But I think the lowest not knowing thing is a little old. You have to take it out.
That doesn't matter. Yeah. But the world knows. They actually announced it. There were cameras when they called him Clark. when they went to his house and talked to his mom.
You put on the specs, man.
It doesn't matter.
There's still that.
It doesn't matter. They've already set it up to be something un-Superman.
And I'm really not, I'm not as concerned about continuity, because I really think continuity is very double-edged. But I am kind of, as with Interstellar, I am concerned about genre. I want to see people take these constraints and make them strengths. Take these things that are
that are perceived as a weakness,
as opposed to sort of nitpickery.
And I think if you're making a film about The Punisher, go ahead. Not that I want to see the film about The Punisher. Go ahead and make him a morally compromised killer. But
we've never seen that before.
No, never. But I think that I think that was a really kind of lazy way out of that plot.
Completely.
Okay. We're rabbit holing, folks. And we got around the bend.
Sure.
Looking for the big finish.
We didn't introduce ourselves, by the way. Do you want to do that and cut that back into the front? I'm just wondering. Because we didn't do like a where what we are thing.
Well,
I don't know.
We are here. We're in the calm.
Badly.
We are living in the dystopian present.
Sure.
And we have great hopes for the future of
and big
genre
on our shoulders.
As long as it doesn't involve mustachioed magic scientists. Or science magist.
I'm going to that movie.
Or marrying your aunt.
Or marrying your aunt.
Yeah.
So I'm going to that movie.
If we stand for anything, it is not marrying your aunt and not conducting magic
with a mustache
and an Oriental sidekick.
Oh, a Democratic reform.
One or the other.
Don't forget Democratic reform.
And Democratic reform.
And I think we've got to cut it short because I do need to go buy new luggage.
Where everyone's a super villain in waiting in the Hong Kong.
Everyone can be Batman.
Everyone, and the Joker. And sure, I mean, come on. Final thought: don't you think if you were pushed, would you wind up a super villain or a superhero? Go.
Hero.
All of Hong Kong right now is really take control of your city, so villain.
You're going villain.
I'm going with hero with a compromised past.
Okay.
I could be a villain, but in my deepest tiny hidey hole of my heart,
I am optimistic.
If you're gonna do that, I'm gonna do anti-hero then.
I'm going with racially untenable sidekick.
Yeah. Oh, great.
Right. I'm just going to be...
And yourself?
Last girl?
I'm going to be the quartermaster. I'll be the queue. I'll be supplying all y'all with weapons and luggage.
Oh, right.
And luggage. And with that, we are the dystopian present. We're broadcasting live from the Kong. Thanks for listening on the oneofus.net podcast network.
Nice to be part of something dystopian, actually.
For once.